Hey, this is Dave Jackson from the School of Podcasting.com. If you are buried under a mountain of debt going, help me, well, guess what? Help has arrived. Its name is Steve Stewart, and you're going to get tons of shovels here to help you dig yourself out of that debt. Because here on the Money Plant SOS podcast, Steve helps everyday Americans just like you pay attention and not interest. Do not touch that dot.
Woohoo! Welcome back, Debt Freedom Fighters, and new listeners. We've got quite a few new listeners joining us from people I met just this last weekend. I'll talk a little bit about that later, but I want to welcome you to the Money Plan SOS podcast. The goal of this show is to teach us how to live on less than we make, show the importance of avoiding and eliminating debt from our lives, and expose the manipulative messages from those trying to get to your money. This is the show that helps everyday Americans to pay attention, not interest. And why do I say that so much? Why do I focus so much time on that? For you new listeners, you can kind of get it. And it really does say it all. Pay attention, not interest. Because when you pay attention to something, when you focus your energy and your effort on something, you tend to make progress. You tend to fix the problem. When you focus on your job, you improve at work. When you focus on your marriage, you improve your relationship. When you focus on your finances, you make better purchasing decisions, your money goes farther, and you start to pay off soul-sucking debt. And of course, then you pay less interest. So pay attention, not interest. That's what this show is all about. If you listen to the entire back catalog, most every episode focuses on some kind of personal finance issue that makes you think. It challenges the way you think about things, and it's not necessarily the same sound bites that you hear all over the place. I make people think, and I even give the devil advocate side sometimes because I want to make sure that we get both sides of the debate. Now, I am very opinionated about my beliefs in this whole thing, and I'll tell you when I believe something to be true, and I'll try to back it up with statistics. But sometimes this personal finance thing that we do, you know, this stuff that we, you know, how we live our lives, how we spend our money, it's a belief thing, and there's really no data to back it up. Sometimes there's behavioral science studies and things like that, and I'll pull those out whenever I can find them. But I think we know just from seeing our own behaviors over time, especially if you've made some positive changes, you can look back and say, oh, I used to behave like that, you know? I used to just spend carelessly. I used to not have a plan. And, you know, where would you be today if you knew what you know now back then? That's how I feel. I could be way further along in my personal finances had some of my decisions not taken me where they did. And so hopefully from listening to the show, you're going to get some of those, the exposure to those ways of thinking that cause you to make better purchasing decisions. This is not a show about pinching pennies. This is not a show about eating rice and beans. You may need to do that. In fact, I'm going to answer an email from someone who may need to do that for a while, but it should not be your way of life. I do not believe in pinching pennies. I do believe in being efficient. I do believe in being purposeful with spending. So if you're going to take a $7,000 vacation, which tends to be what we do every year, then you need a plan to save up for it. $7,000 is about what we spent on our last couple of vacations. To me, that's a lot of money. But we save up, we plan it, we sacrifice in other places so that we can do this one thing. So that's what this show is about, paying attention to our money. If you're a new listener, welcome aboard. We're so glad you're here. If you want to find out any more information, just go to moneyplansos.com. That's where you can find contact information to ask questions. That's where you can find more podcasts and blog posts. And that's where you can sign up to take the virtual budget coaching course that teaches you the absolute simplest budget that works in under an hour with high definition videos that you walk through. It's very cool. All right, so we're going to get into today's topics. First, we're going to answer a listener's email. I'm going to ask you the question that he sent in. Let it sink in so maybe you can start to think and come up with your own answer. And then at the end of the show, I'm going to answer that. But then in between, we're going to talk about the biggest credit score myths. And then we'll talk about the brilliance of ALS marketing. It's something that just came up on my radar in the last 24 hours. You probably already know what I'm going to talk about. But I want to talk about the marketing side of it and how brilliant it is. And it's not the only brilliant marketing scheme that's out there. I want to talk about this one specifically because it's touched me. So let's get into the listener's email right now. Actually, I misspoke. This is coming from a Facebook fan, and he writes in, "Good afternoon, Steve. I have a question for you. I know you follow most of Dave Ramsey's baby steps." Actually, I follow them all. "My financial situation has not been the greatest in the past year or so. I have 3 credit cards that are 60 days past due because I just haven't had the money to pay them since I have other responsibilities. I want to save the emergency fund of $1,000 for step 1. Do I need to be current with my minimum payments before I save the $1,000? So those are his specifics. 3 credit cards, each one is 60 days past due. He wants to start saving the emergency fund of $1,000. That's the first step before you start knocking out all your debt. Do you need to be current before you start saving that emergency fund? I'll give you my answer at the end of the show. Over the years, I have grown to, we'll go ahead and say it out loud, I've grown to despise the whole idea of building your credit score. I know that sounds weird to a lot of people, but if you've been listening to the show for any number of months already, then you know why. You already know the reasons why. But I think it's important that we just talk about the biggest credit score myths that are out there. And some of these I've never actually discussed on the show before. So let's go through it. Number one, biggest credit score myth is that you have to carry a balance to have a good score. This is a dangerous myth because it causes people not to pay off their credit cards. They hear this thing and they think, oh, well, you know, in order for me to have a good score, I have to show that I can carry a load of debt. Well, that's a load of bleep. That's absolutely not true. Now, I will say, though, that by having a good credit score, you are showing that you can pay back debt. But in most cases, you will have debt. And with debt comes a balance and more than likely some interest. So let's look at it this way. The FICO score is built on 5 measurements, 5 components. 1 is your payment history on your debts. 2, the amount that you owe on your debts. 3, the length of your credit history. Of course, the credit history is based on your debts and debt products. 4 is new credit, which are lines of debt. And 5, the types of credit or debt that is being used. This is all based on debt. And I want you to think about something specifically. If you ever go and pull your credit report, which you can do annually, you can do it at annualcreditreport.com for free. There's no contract. There's nothing like that. Then you will notice that there's nothing on there as far as your normal monthly bills. And when I say bills versus payments, what I'm talking about is your normal monthly bills, a type of bill that anybody in America will have, your electric bill, your cell phone or your phone bill, your cable bill. If you're a renter, your rent payments never show up on your credit report. Why? They're not debts. So they don't help your credit score. But if you're ever late on any of them, and they get reported, guess what? It dings your credit score. So that seems quite unfair to me. So coming back around to this 1 biggest credit score myth, saying you have to carry a balance to have a good score, you don't have to carry a balance because you could have a credit card that you pay off every month. But people will say this because normally you will have a balance, like on a car loan, a student loan. Maybe it's a mortgage. So it's common sense that you'll have a balance. You'll have this balance, and that of course does affect your credit score. But you don't have to carry a balance. You can, I don't recommend this, but you could have a credit card that you pay off every month. I just recommend you don't have a credit card. Then you don't have to worry about paying it off every month. All right, moving on to 2. Biggest credit score myth is that it's a government program. The government has nothing to do with credit scores. Credit scores are monitored and reported by publicly and privately held companies who turn a profit. So this isn't a government-managed program. There are government regulations on things like debt collections, but can you imagine our government in the shape that it's in managing the credit scoring system? Sounds like an oxymoron to me. Number three, biggest credit score myth, that you need a credit score to rent an apartment. I mentioned earlier that your rent payments never show up on your credit bureau report, which then, of course, doesn't help your credit score. So why do you need a credit score to rent an apartment? Now, there are some apartment complexes that all they want to look at is your credit history. And of course, if you don't have a credit history yet, you know, it's really sad that we have a whole culture saying that you need to borrow money to build a credit score so that you can then rent an apartment complex. Well, I don't know about you, but I've talked to a lot of people who have said, boy, when I was younger, I made a lot of stupid purchasing decisions and it damaged their finances. They admit, and I admit myself, that when I was younger, I didn't make good purchasing decisions like I do today. So imagine now that we're telling people you have to go into debt. Why? So you can rent an apartment. Well, there are complexes out there. There are places you can rent that do not require a credit score. Now, I will say that they'll probably do a background check, and they should pull your credit bureau to look for any negative information. I completely agree with that. If you have negative information on your credit bureau, yeah, I don't want to rent to somebody who's not able to make their payments. I mean, that's a no-brainer, right? But to exclude somebody who's never borrowed money before from being possibly their best renter, you never know, just because maybe their parents paid for their kid's way through school and the kid paid for a cash car and just purchased everything with cash. And of course, you can pay your bills online, your electric, your cable, all that stuff, and that never goes through any kind of a debt product, then you won't have a credit score. So why would that exclude somebody from being able to rent an apartment? It's just sad. But that is a myth that's out there. Number four, biggest credit score myth, is that credit scores will help you build wealth. We went through it at the beginning. A credit score is based on debt and debt products, your ability to pay back the debt. So really, a good credit score won't help you to build wealth. What it can do is help you to more easily qualify for a better interest rate. So in essence, a credit score can't help you build wealth, but it can help mitigate the damage from borrowing money. And finally, the number five biggest credit score myth is, the more I borrow, the better my score. Well, actually, that is sort of true, but it's more about ratios of available credit versus the balance owed plus the payment history. That's why they say to use credit cards, but to pay them off. So if you borrow more and more money, eventually you're going to get into a really bad debt situation. That's where I'm talking about the ratios of available credit. If you start using too much of your ratio, that's going to hurt your score. And of course, if you keep borrowing more and more money, you're going to get to a point where you can't make your payments. You can't pay off credit cards 100%. And that's where you end up with the listener email that we're going to be answering at the end here, where, you know, he can't even make the minimums on three credit cards because he has other responsibilities. So I guess we could say that the more you borrow, the better your score up to a limit. But once it gets to be too much, then it starts to be a ticking time bomb. You know, we could look at it this way. You can eat McDonald's for lunch every day. If you eat a cheeseburger and fries, you can work it off by jogging for an hour. The net result will be a calorie gain of zero. You'll intake a certain amount of calories. You'll expend a lot of calories jogging. Your net result by the end of the day is zero. So let's put a financial spin on that. If you eat less, you can exercise less and still have that net calorie of zero, which I simply call living on what you make. If you eat less and exercise more, you will have a net result of weight loss. You'll expend more calories. You'll burn off more than you took in. And that's simply just like paying off debt or having the ability to save and invest money. You could also eat more, exercise less, and that turns into weight gain. And of course, financially speaking, if we consume more, like eating more and exercise less, which is paying down less, or, you know, we don't have the income to support higher consumption, then we gain debt. And have you noticed that people who are already physically fit don't seem to have a problem exercising? I'm totally jealous, you know? I wish I could exercise more, but it's because I've got too much weight. If I could shed the weight, it would be easier to exercise. So there's a big dynamic difference there. So the reason why people who are already physically fit can exercise without too much of a problem, it's because they've already shed the extra weight. There's not as much carrying around, and they're not consuming more than they can work off. It's the same with personal finances. People who are financially fit have already shed the extra debt, and they're not consuming more than they make, so it's even easier to save for vacations or replacement vehicle or whatever once the debt's been shed, because there isn't that extra weight of debt hanging around like a spare tire. So let me wrap this up by giving you the five biggest credit score myths and then a call to action. The five biggest credit score myths are: you have to carry a balance to have a good score, that it's a government program, that you need a credit score to rent an apartment, that you need a credit score to help build wealth, and that the more you borrow, the better your score. If you've been a listener for quite a few months and you already know, this is just a pep talk. This is just to keep you focused, to remind you to keep working on your goals, to get out of debt, to save a big emergency fund, save your kids' college, save for your vacation, save for a replacement vehicle or whatever. You might be out of consumer debt already, so you know, you're on your way. For those who might be new to the show, this is your encouragement to get started to pay off the debt. Don't let a credit score get in your way of being financially fit. Base your financial decisions on your long-term goals. If you'd like, I can give you a couple examples from our own experiences. You know, we've got the big vacation every year. We put a little bit aside every month to be able to hit that goal. We don't care about our credit score there. We could use a credit card and pay it off every month, but more than likely, there's going to be a day, because it's just in my nature, that I'm going to spend more than I should on this credit card. It's going to make it harder to pay it back in full, or if I do pay it back in full, it's taking more money away from being able to save for that vacation. So I just don't even play that game. Now that we are consumer debt-free, you know, we don't have any credit cards, we don't have any student loans, we don't have anything but the mortgage. And at the end of December 2015, our goal is to have our house paid off. We've only got 17 and a half more payments. I expect to get that down to 16, to where the last payment is going to be made in December. Once the house is paid off, there's not going to be anything on our credit report to base a score on. So I'm going to have a credit score of zero. I'm not making a decision to keep a mortgage so that I can have a credit score. I'm not going to worry about it. Our long-term goals include a paid-for house so that we've got $1,400 a month that we don't have to pay out to the bank, and instead save up for our long-term goals, a replacement vehicle, my daughter's first car, college, and wedding. In that order, please. We've got goals on eventually buying a ranch house, and I'm talking about a house on a ranch with horses. That's a wonderful goal we want to work towards. And if we are distracted from all these messages that we have to carry a balance to have a good credit score, that we need to have a credit score to build wealth, those are all distracting from our personal long-term goals. If you're still not convinced and you still think you need to build your credit, then just think of it like the Big Macs. Building credit is like eating more and more Big Macs. If you want a healthy score after consuming credit and consuming credit and consuming credit, then you're just going to have to burn more calories or burn more of your income to be able to maintain that consumption level. Certainly, it would be easier to reach your financial goals if you're already financially fit, if you already shed the debt. But a lot of us still have debt and we're working on it. So keep going. You'll want to consume less, and then you'll eventually be able to save more. And throughout the entire process, we need to pay more attention and less interest. Let's talk about marketing, because I'm constantly amazed by the creativity of some people to get our attention with marketing. Now, marketing and advertising are two different things. Advertising is like commercials, billboards, you know, putting signs up on things. Marketing is a lot larger than that. It gets you to think more about your problems and solutions than just to say, here's what this does, buy this, and this is available now, and things like that. Marketing has this great way of getting your attention, which, of course, you need to be aware of that as well, because sometimes we're going to be coerced into buying something that maybe wasn't in our long-term plans. Let me use the example of what Apple does. Apple does a wonderful job of advertising. When the iPods were being marketed, when the iPhones were being marketed, the whole PC versus Mac commercial series with the two guys, brilliant. That was advertising. But marketing was the entire ecosystem around it. You know, when I first bought my iPod, I was still using a PC. It was a Dell laptop, and then I had a tower at home as well. But then after using the iPod, I started wanting to use a Mac because they seemed to work better. There's that halo effect is what they call it. And I started to crave a Mac, and then I got the Mac. Then they came out with this touchscreen thing called an iPad, and we eventually got one of those because, well, there's a lot of great features in it, but we were already involved in the marketing piece of the whole thing. It wasn't the ads on TV that made us want to buy it. It was the whole ecosystem around having a Mac. And Mac gets a bad rap because it's perceived that you're cool with a Mac and you're not cool with a PC. And I think Mac did that to themselves, you know, but that's part of their marketing. They somehow convince us that Macs are cooler than PCs. Whether you believe that or not, that's the message and that's what we bought into. And of course, some of the advertising mimics that. But the marketing ideas that some people come up with are brilliant and makes you think about it. Now, when it comes to these chain emails, you know, send this to three friends and you'll have great luck for the day, all that, I don't subscribe to that stuff. I just delete it. Today I got one of those, and it was from a friend, so I was kind of disappointed in that. But then I looked at what it was, and it got my attention, and I had to take action because of this personal connection with the ALS Ice Bucket Challenge. James Kinson, who was actually the guest on the last episode, challenged me and two other friends to the ALS Ice Bucket Challenge. He took the challenge, which entitled him to then challenge three other people. And what you have to do is either, within 24 hours, you have to either film yourself getting a bucket of ice poured on your head or pay $100 to ALS research. Now, just to tell you a little bit of my story, I lost my dad to ALS about 13 months ago. So I have a personal connection to ALS. And the Ice Bucket Challenge, you know, it's kind of silly and stupid, but it could also be fun. But that's what got my attention, is that here, who thought this thing up? This is brilliance right here. It's just a bucket of ice water. And somehow that entitles you to challenge three other people to dump a bucket of ice on their head. It's kind of funny and hilarious, but then it has that underlying backstory of being for charity. You know what I mean? So there's a bit of, I don't know, philanthropy in there or something like that. But, you know, so I don't agree with the whole, you know, hey, I'm tagging you, so you have to do this or that, or you're a bum. I don't agree with that. But I do applaud the brilliant, fun idea of just saying, hey, Joe, go and pour a bucket of ice in your head in the next 24 hours, or you got to send $100 to ALS research. The internal battle inside my head is, well, I don't have the right to force Joe to pour a bucket of ice on his head or to send ALS $100. It's up to him to actually follow through. And I don't think there's any police that are going to come and arrest him if he doesn't do it. But what this entire thing does, whether everybody follows through or even just 1% of the people always follow through, then they have won. Then ALS research has won, because you're going to get a lot of awareness to this cause, or you're going to get people who just donate money. Like, I'm going to actually, I'm traveling right now. There's no way for me to go and to get a videotape of myself getting ice poured on my head the next 24 hours. And it's not going to happen. So I'm going to go ahead and send $100. I like the idea. I think it's part of this community, which, you know, James Kinson is a friend of mine. I have that personal association with ALS, which my dad died from a year ago. So I'm going to send $100. I'm going to gladly write that check. This marketing idea is brilliant. It brings awareness. It's going to bring in donations. It got the focus on a good cause. So although I dislike the whole, you know, the whole forward this email to 100 of your friends type idea, I don't like that, but I can applaud the brilliance of this marketing idea for ALS Ice Bucket Challenge. You know, if you go onto Twitter and you use the hashtag Ice Bucket Challenge or hashtag ALS Ice Bucket Challenge, you'll see people tweeting videos of all, you know, there's celebrities who are doing this. I saw one with Robert Downey Jr., George Takei. There was one with Carrie Underwood and another guy. It's kind of fun to watch them. They're getting ice poured on their head. Whoopee, you know, right? Maybe they could send the $100 too because they're famous and rich, right? But you know what? I'm getting off track here. The idea of marketing is to bring up awareness and, of course, to eventually cause people to take action. And in this situation, I can applaud that idea. Pouring a bucket of ice on my head sounds like fun. I might still go ahead and do that anyway. And who knows? Maybe I'll challenge you. Before I give you my answer to the listener email that I read earlier in the episode, I'm going to say a quick shout out to two people who left 5-star reviews for the podcast in iTunes. One is from Lady Deltona, and she says that she'd been listening to the podcast from the beginning for about a month. Wow. I just checked a little while ago. There is more than 3 days worth of audio content in the History of Money Plan SOS. There's 3 days worth of audio content there. That's a lot of audio. I can't believe she actually listened to that. Also want to thank Amigo 85916. Says, I really like Steve's ability to convey his message. He breaks it down nicely. Thanks, amigo. That's really cool. Thank you very much. And if you want to leave a 5-star review for the show, you can do it in iTunes or on Stitcher. Just search for Money Plan, and I usually come up right in the search results there. Love any feedback you can give me there, or even send me something and just contact me through moneyplansos.com. And let's do that now. Let's get into a listener question that was sent in. Remember, this gentleman has got 3 credit cards. They're each 60 days past due, and he does not have an emergency fund. The question is, does he need to be current with minimum payments on those debts before he saves the $1,000 emergency fund? What's your answer? In my opinion, yes, he should be current with at least the minimum payments on all his active debts. Now, there's a caveat here. Because he's currently 60 days behind, he's at this pivot point where he can either try to catch them up or they're going to become bad debts. Now, I don't like the idea of bad debts, but they're already bad debts. So do we focus on getting them caught up, or do we just let them go and have to deal with them later? Basically, he's got 2 choices, and here's how I spelled it out. The first one is to let the debts go bad, stay bad, keep everything else current while saving up the $1,000, and then tackle these 3 credit cards when he's finished paying off all his active debts with the debt snowball. Of course, the bad part of that is that he eventually could get sued, you know, anywhere from 6 to 18 months, depending on the bank and how much is owed on these credit cards. But he's probably got time, so he's got time on the side there, but eventually he's going to have to get to him, right? The second option is the hard one. It's the work extra, get the second job, sell stuff, cut expenses, or all the above, get them caught up, and then maintain the minimum payments while getting the $1,000 together so this crap will never happen again. Ugh, I just hate these situations that we get into with debt. This guy's in a corner. He's stuck. He's got to do something. One, it's kind of the laid back, let something happen to him mode. That's the let him go bad, keep everything else current, then try to tackle him in the future. He doesn't have a lot of control on that. Whereas I prefer number 2 because I have control over that. If I work the extra job, if I sell stuff, if I cut expenses, that's all on me. That's all up to me. I have control of the situation there. Yes, I'm behind, but if I can scratch and scrape and get caught up, I'm in control there. I like that option better. So if you can do that, do it. You got to get rid of it, bro. The soul-sucking debt, which is on credit cards, which everybody says is so great, having credit cards and having a great credit score, this is causing you to lose options and opportunities in your life because now you've got to work extra, cut expenses, all this other stuff, or they're going to start taking stuff away. Either one of those two options might work. Bottom line, we've got to address the problem. Now, I did get some more communication back from him. He is ready to work hard to get this done. So that's really encouraging to know. That's part of the battle he's already won. He's facing the truth that there's obligations that he needs to take care of. He's not going to shy away. He's not just going to file bankruptcy. He's going to do the work. And that's the way to do it. Get rid of it, bro. If you have a question you'd like to have answered on the show, email steve@moneyplansos.com. Or send me a message through Facebook at facebook.com/moneyplansos. Let me leave you with a Steve-elation. 1 + 1 = 2 unless you invest in education, building a business, or your finances. It is then when 1 + 1 becomes greater than 2. God bless. Have a great week. If you're looking for a way to get your money under control, then take the virtual budget coaching course at moneyplansos.com/start. The virtual budget coaching course is 1 hour with me on video, walking you through my signature process that helps you to pay attention, not interest. Visit moneyplansos.com/start for more information.